Hi, and welcome to the Dark Web Vlogs, where I'm sharing the experiences I've had working with clients on some of the most outrageous deals being run over the dark web. The job I'll be talking about today is an interesting story about science and discovery, and the subject of study in this particular experiment was DMT. Using technology not yet released to the public, this experiment was for a long-term trip, but not a lifetime trip, which is where one neuroscientist was headed. Top scientists need help from those not only with the skills, but the willingness to go in and get her. And they called me. They call me the Ghost. I'm ex-CIA and now a dark operative on the dark web. I've worked a lot of jobs, and this is my account of what happened when I go into the craziest world I've ever seen to get a woman who is on the verge of crazy herself. Take a listen and enjoy. Before I begin, I have to say that this vlog is broken up into two parts, so I want you to be aware that there are two videos here. There was just so much going on. I had to break it up. And I hope that you'll stick it out, and I hope that you enjoy the information on a subject that so many are wondering about. So remember, there's a part one video and a part two. Okay, let's get started. Now I have to say, I'd sort of been waiting for this request. You know, not this one exactly, but with the curiosity around DMT and the trips and the meaning of it all just growing, I believed that something was going to come my way eventually. And sure enough, this request came in. First off, if you aren't familiar with DMT, go ahead and look it up. You will find plenty. But in summary, it's a natural chemical that is a psychoactive substance. It's been found in animals, plants, and is thought to also be produced in our human brains, the pineal gland, which influences the sleep cycle. DMT is a hallucinogen, and it will send you on a psychotic trip. But in order for it to last, you need to mix it with an MAOI. And this mixture is traditionally a tea made from herbs and vines and leaves, the leaves containing the DMT, and put together in a brew, you have ayahuasca, or ayahuasca. It's the tea, and with this, you take in the mixture orally to initiate an hallucinogenic trip. Taking in DMT gives the user an intense, psychedelic, and some say spiritual, experience. And because of this, it's gotten the nickname the spirit molecule. DMT is illegal pretty much all over the world. People still find it, or they travel to where it's okay to use, you know, the Amazon, where the indigenous people have brewed up the tea for ritual purposes for years. I mean, you want it, you can go there to places dedicated to providing these experiences that are said to help with things like clearing your mind, help with PTSD and anxiety, to name a few. Studies around DMT have been around for years because people really want to know if there's proof it can help. And they want to know if the places they go while on these psychotic trips and the things they see actually do exist, because many users often see the same thing. Okay, back to this request. This request came in and it was different, but it also sounded serious. They couldn't stress the urgency enough. It came to me from a lab in New Mexico, and it's a secret lab. It's an extension to another long-standing lab in the same location, but I know it comes from a legit place and a legit group of scientists there, one of which is my main contact, and I'll refer to him as Jonathan. The request came in at like 1 a.m, and he says that he was referred to me by a group at Roswell, which obviously gets my attention. Jonathan's group was working with them, and they provided some of the technology his group is using for their current experiments, including the one being used in their current problem. And then he gets more into what that is. The request says that his partner in the lab took it upon herself to take an experiment they'd been working on to the next level. And she was alone when this all went down. She had taken a psychedelic trip into the unknown using DMT, and they needed help bringing her home. Now, if this were some other drug or I didn't know what's out there and being done with DMT already, I just would have stopped him right there because it would have sounded like a bad trip. You know, she needed a doctor. But I know there has to be more going on here. This group is very high level, And knowing that, they have been researching what this chemical can do, and knowing they've been working with Roswell, I have to believe they have something pretty incredible going on for them to reach out like this. And I want to know more. I agree to meet up, and we meet up in Albuquerque. Jonathan's not going to take me to those labs quite yet. This is all top secret. There are only a handful of people that really know about these labs in the first place. Anyway, he won't be taking me there until if and when I agree to take the job. He has me meet him at the entrance to the Rio Grande Nature Park. It's like 9 in the morning. You know, we'll walk and talk, and he'll fill me in on more of the details. And what he shared was pretty amazing. He starts out by giving me just some of the background. Okay, so one of the things they were working on was that they were setting up to track someone while they're on a DMT trip. You know, so they've already been working on how to translate dreams and stuff, and so you can see what goes on in your head when you're sleeping. But this group wanted to track travel, specifically the travel path people take while on a DMT trip, because that's our focus of study right now. The technology that they were working with was a very sophisticated system that has the ability to read and project what's happening in the mind. It records it so you can actually watch it, more like a movie. They were able to create a type of virtual travel mapping that would allow for better study of what DMT does and what it can do for humans, and try to get to the truth around the places people claim to have gone while affected by DMT. So many of the stories have so many similarities that it's, of course, catching attention. Why do people see so many of the same things? And how does what they experience relate to their real lives? Well, for one, they want to see and confirm what the users are saying they're even experiencing. This device, this VTM device, hooks up to your head, a lot like an EEG. You know, it has a bunch of electrodes. Some of this advanced technology they're using for this machine is what came from Roswell. And it's great for the scientists that want to know about all of this, right? But the people want to know what's up with it too. Maybe you want to know. People love the fact that there might actually be meaning behind these DMT trips, or that they can help their lives, that maybe we have some possible options to conquer a deeper consciousness. Maybe there's an option to travel to far-off lands and meet beings from faraway places, using DMT as the gateway. The fantasy around this idea all pulls people in. And honestly, I don't know how you wouldn't be interested in some of that if it were possible to travel like that. So then, it's great to track if you can, but ideally, this group of scientists, need someone to be in for longer than a typical trip to be able to gather enough data on what's really going on and what's possible. The user on one of these trips has a different sense of time, which does help. The trip itself only lasts 5 to 20 minutes, but when you're on the inside, it can seem much longer than that, and so you can do more than, say, you would in a real 15 minutes. Well, this group was looking to extend the length of those trips, you know, go beyond that. And Jonathan tells me that if they have figured out the perfectly balanced formula to do so, they constructed a dosing unit called a Daya Vape Inhaler, or Davy for short. You put on the mask, and the machine will administer the right amounts for the herb and the DMT, you know, a mixture for the user to get them under and to stay under for as long as they're hooked up. Davy is basically supplying a mist version of the DMT-based ayahuasca through the mask and into the lungs of the user. The way he described it, it sort of reminded me of a nebulizer, only it doesn't help any illness. It takes you away. These two things were going to be big for their studies on DMT, to find out the truth around this spirit molecule. But these two things weren't all the way perfected yet. There were still some things they wanted to fix to make sure their new system would work in a way that was reliable. Right now, today, when I was there, the virtual mapping was a little slow. You know, things were missed. As for Davy, they were still testing it for stability and safety. So the system, you know, the whole system between Davy and the VMT device was not quite ready to be used for their studies. Not yet, but they were close. But Jonathan's close partner in all of this, and I'll call her Lena, was losing patience. She had already volunteered herself to be the first one to go under, and she was ready. The dosage in Davy seemed to be working good. And even though they couldn't map all of it, she just thought she could fill in the blanks when she got back. And, you know, in their lab, they had other machines in there for oxygen, monitoring blood pressure and vitals. It would be safe, she thought. Why couldn't she go under? Well, the team was just not comfortable. They wanted to finish out their testing and make sure it would work properly. And even when they got to that point, they wanted to baby step it. You know, start with 5 minutes and then up it by 2 minutes each time. But it was like Lena became obsessed with doing a long trip. She wanted things to move along faster. And she'd been on trips before for research purposes, but just couldn't get enough out of those trips to make real sense out of any of it. Like any of the research projects she works on, she wanted more answers. She wanted the answers. And in the end, she couldn't wait and ended up going all in one Friday night after the others had left for the day and the weekend. A couple of them found her the next morning, that Saturday, when they went in the afternoon to do some extra work. She was still under. She logged her trip the night before with a takeoff time as 7:15 and a targeted travel time of 30 minutes. When the other members of her team found her, the mapping was on, and Davy was all hooked up and doing its thing, pumping away. Problem was, her set time, you know, she meant to do 30 minutes, but she had set it for 30 hours instead. Human error, no doubt. But now there was the team, there she was, and they just weren't quite sure what to do. I mean, had she just waited, the equipment would have been approved and the team would have been there and could have checked and double-checked the settings. But now they were scrambling, and Jonathan is hoping I can help. Which brings me back to Jonathan. What he's looking for, what they need, is someone who has the skills to navigate the unknown and who can handle a job like this one. Lena is stuck, and she can't get herself out of this. And the scientists, well, they aren't really equipped for a situation like this. I mean, these guys are researchers. You know, they're deep into study and examination, not something like this. I mean, they run the show. They're not really into running around different worlds chasing someone down. As for me, I know enough about DMT and have spoken to many people that have taken these rides. I've visited ayahuasca retreats and have talked to many people that really believe in this stuff. I've never used DMT or drank the tea or anything else. But my point is, I know that it's a strange drug and strange things happen around it. It's the kind of thing that crosses a line. But what line exactly and how? Well, that's what they're trying to figure out. And now they're trying to figure out what to do with Lena. They tried to take her off Davy, but her heartbeat and blood pressure went crazy. She started breathing heavy, and as an immediate reaction, they just hooked her back up, and everything went back to normal. They called in one of their on-site doctors. I mean, they have a full medical staff in the lab, because they're always doing crazy experiments, and stuff's always happening, you know, they have to. But anyway, they called him in, and they went through the process again, but the same reaction. They hooked her back up. And then he added more electrodes for his own EEG to monitor brain activity and track the neural patterns of her brain. This was a whole process. I mean, it took all day weeding things out and going over different ideas and options. They tried a lot of things, but in the end they concluded that this wasn't a physical problem. This was all in her head, in her mind. If they tried to disconnect her the way that she was, they'd lose her physically. Now, she was in some other dimension where her inner self maybe could survive just fine, right? But who would know? How would you ever find out? All they did know is that if they disconnected her, they would surely kill her, by our definition anyway, in the state she was in. And that's when they went hunting for more options and found me. So now, apparently, Lena has been under or in for over 24 hours. Her vitals are fine. She's getting nutrients and hydration intravenously. So yeah, she's alive and breathing, but her mind is somewhere else entirely. And you know, I'm thinking, yeah, you know, this is all pretty crazy, and they do have a dilemma on their hands. But if she's lost her mind, how can I help with this? I mean, I can't just dive into her mind and yank her out. Well, Jonathan tells me that's exactly what I'd have to do. And he tells me he has a way that we could make this happen. And it would also be using borrowed technology from Roswell. And at Roswell, they've tested it and confirmed it to work. It was something intended to be used for extreme PTSD. as well as sort of a high-level lie detector test, all military stuff. But Jonathan's group, however, has not tested it. But he sees this as really their only option, and they've offered it. So they have it set up, and using Lena as the base, we would in fact go in after her, into her mind. The experience would be as real to us as the world we're in right now. It would be a purely psychic event, facilitated by a special machine they have that will induce sleep in a way to get us through this. We, as the travelers, would not need to go under the influence of DMT or anything that would cause any of those types of effects, like hallucinations, because we would need to be fully clear on our travels. So we would not go under using Davy, but that said, he tells me that we would still have to be influenced by a drug, one that they have proven to be safe, that leaves no lasting effects, but that will keep us asleep and connected. Again, this was all tested at Roswell. It's pretty neat stuff. So, you know, since we would be using almost done with testing equipment and then some borrowed equipment, I want to know what they can offer me as far as safety measures. I mean, what are the real risks here? And Jonathan explains there are risks when messing with the body or mind, always. But in our case, we will simply be going to sleep. Being alert and clear, in our case versus Lena's, is required and will be our biggest tool. This will not mess with our minds in that way, he tells me. On the inside, we'll need to remember that we're sleeping, that we should not get caught up in the dream because we could then get sucked in as well. So that is a risk. That's a big one. But he says the inducer's job, that machine, is to make sure we're down enough to go in, but that we ourselves don't get sucked up into our own REM or dream state and get lost. They don't need to send in more people, you know, to hunt us all down. He tells me that, you know, we could have harsh reactions to what we see and what we find. Could put us in a state of shock or send our vitals running crazy. But that's why we were recommended to him, because we've seen so much already. As far as any health issues go, they will have them monitoring us, and then they will also have medical staff on hand, watching us very closely in case we need to be pulled out. I've heard so much about DMT and the urges people have to go on a trip or go on another trip. You know, on top of safety measures, I'm just very curious what I will find. And even though I've heard a lot of stories, I asked Jonathan how they would explain it all, since they're the ones studying it. He tells me that unlike other dimensions that mirror our own or feel like our own, this will feel even more real than our world, that I will be overcome by a feeling of bliss. And then he compared it to a near-death experience, actually, because of how we might sense leaving our bodies and entering another place, another kingdom, another realm, not of this earth. He told me I could expect something spiritual, mysterious, maybe frightening, while also mystical. So, I mean, as you can see, there was just a ton going on here. Jonathan and I went over some more safety issues, some boundaries, you know, time, and some of the more detailed technicalities around this whole thing. And by the time we circled back around to where we started in the park, I have what I need. My team and I are always up for risky travel, but good and reliable safety measures are a must. And Jonathan provided me enough detail that I feel confident that he can keep us safe and get us out if need be. I accept the job. And you know, I discussed this job with my team before I left, and they knew it was in the request. They knew it all involved DMT, as well as, you know, some of the top research neuroscientists in the world. And they also knew it was time sensitive. So they were standing by while I went and checked this all out. And then the ones that were coming, they were on the next plane out once I gave them the word. I'm bringing two of my team members to go in with me. And that will be Harley and Frankie. I want Harley there because of her PhD in psychology. And that might be useful here. You know, how Lena's doing, how we're all doing while we're in there. And then Frankie, because he's just a good guy to have around, you know, going into the unknown like this. After they get there, we all meet Jonathan at the location he gave us. And from there, he takes us to and into his lab. And I have to say, you can only wonder, right, about how many of these secret labs and things are out there. Because this one, for instance, you would never know it was there. I'm always just amazed by that and what they have going on, you know, where we think there's nothing. Anyway, when we get to the actual lab, there's quite a bit going on overall. But when we get back to where their situation is, it's pretty quiet. You know, the whole thing kind of reminded me of that movie, Flatliners. I mean, there she is on this padded table, completely under, and you have the people around her making sure that at least she's okay. But there's not a lot of action. It's just her and them watching over her. She had a lot going on in between, you know, the intravenous line, the electrodes, Davy. It was quite the setup. Jonathan takes me, Frankie, and Harley over to the machines to show us what's up. And first up was the VTM device, VTM being the virtual travel mapping. And remember, this reads and projects what's going on in your mind. And you may have seen talk around this out there. Well, something similar, you know, not this advanced. Like a machine that, you know, can take pictures of your brain, you know, brain scans, and translate them into images. And then they match them to actual pictures that are out there. You know, so take that and then add more advanced technology and you would have the VTM device. This thing doesn't put things together using random pictures, you know, like what's been worked on. It was actually recreating or redrawing what was being translated. And Jonathan said it was pretty accurate. Right now, the system was taking longer to complete its job. So, you know, it might get through a bit of time and then some time would be lost while it had to jump and catch up to where it should be. The machine was small, it was portable, but it also looked pretty complicated. I mean, there were all the electrodes coming out of it, the wires, the lights, the keyboard, all of that. You know, it was hooked up to this monitor screen that had matrix code just continually scrolling. That was the machine recording what it found. And then there was a second setup hooked up to the VTM. Well, it was actually part of it, but it was on a separate rolling stand. It looked more like a computer than a piece of medical equipment. And that's where all the data actually got translated and then projected. They couldn't watch real time, at least not yet, but that's part of what they're working on. But that's where the data becomes a movie. Right now, it took approximately 60 hours to convert 24 hours of data into a movie. It's complicated, technical stuff. So a big delay, but still very cool, you know, and they'll get there. Next up was Davy, and that looked pretty simple, actually. It was just another machine on wheels, but there was a lot less to it. It looked more simple. You know, there were doors underneath where you could open like a small cupboard and you could load whatever chemicals that you needed. And the sound of it, you know, the pumping kind of reminded me of those pumps they have in hospital rooms sometimes. And then it all just fed up and over to the mask, which was securely placed over Lena's face. And she was out. We met the research team and that was pretty neat. I mean, this is one smart group. We met the doctors that would be there. Jonathan then shows us the adjoining room where we would be. You can see it through the glass, and that's where we would be set up. I see a VTM device in there and then some other machine, which I assume is the inducer, and Jonathan confirms that it is. Lena will stay where she is, and there'll be a special line connecting us to her. Now, because we don't know what state Lena's in there, we need to get in as soon as possible. The time when we get done meeting everyone and get the full tour and everything, it's about 5 p.m. And this is all happening in the same day, so you know, I got there in the morning, flew in first thing, and then, of course, my team, they weren't far behind me. So we start to prep for the trip. They have us put on these black bodysuits. We can't be distracted by jewelry or anything flopping around. We each get an IV for hydration purposes because we'll be using a lot of energy. We get set up with all the machines and we were given just a bit more information before going down. And now remember, Lena is our base and we are at the mercy of what she has created or brought out or found on this trip. We're going into where she is. What we do need to keep an eye on, however, is that our minds stay clear. So if one of us was having some kind of personal problem or, you know, we're feeling down, that person wouldn't be able to go on this trip. We don't want to bring anything upsetting in or things that are bothering us because it could get in the way. Jonathan knows that he can't promise where we'll end up, but he does tell us again and again that we are in her thoughts, so we should end up close to where she is. There's no time in the DMT realm, so we need to be careful because she might feel like she spent half her life there. No one can know. No one can force her out either. We are in her mind and that which controls her. If she won't come with us, we can't pull her out of her own head. We need to try to talk her into believing that she's not of that world that she's in, that she's part of this world. Then there are one of two things we can do. They will be copying the code as it's generated from the VTM device before it even tries to go make the movie. They will copy it into another system that will be looking for and alerting them of two different signals. One is of distress, and the other is to pull them all out. If we start yelling or thinking very hard the term abandon, This will generate an alert for that. It will pop up in the coding. And should they see that, they will instantly pull out Frankie, Harley, and I, and they will disconnect us from Lena. If we start yelling or thinking very hard the term success, they will also get an alert and they will pull all of us and take Lena off of her machines. We don't take any weapons in with us or anything. It's not like we can do that. So we're relying on actually being able to change her mind, to get her out of her mind. And with that, we went under. And we all experienced it pretty much the same way as we were being pulled into Lena's world. You know, it wasn't our individual minds that were creating our experience. It was her DMT realm. And so we would see what she had for us to see. And what I can tell you is what I experienced. We were all put to sleep, and my world went dark, like it was pitch black. And then it was almost like I was sliding down this really long, curvy slide. I couldn't really feel it, you know, the slide itself, but it was directing me, and I could feel myself going one way and then the other way, like that. It was total darkness, but then that started to change. And all this was happening super fast, by the way. I can't say, though, that this all felt like the blast off that so many people describe. But remember, we're not on DMT. We're just being put down in a controlled and medicated sleep. We are being pulled in to our destination. We're not really blasting off. Anyway, the black starts to change, and all of a sudden, there are rods of color shooting past me, one at a time. You know, a green one, a blue one, a hot pink one. And after about two more seconds, or however long it really was, there are hundreds, if not thousands, shooting by me at a time through what seems like an infinite space around me. The one part, I guess, that did feel a lot like a blast-off experience maybe was right before we arrived, shooting down this slide and going through all the colors. It felt like being transported, like Jonathan had said, almost out of our bodies and into another dimension. It was like we went through some kind of outer layer of our lives. And then, boom, two of the vlog Neuroscientist on DMT Ayahuasca Trip, an alternate dimension, maybe going insane or be stuck forever. If you didn't listen to part one, go back and catch that video because you'll want the background. Okay, well, we all went in, and I shot out to the other side, and I'm all of a sudden standing there. And there's no real sense of anything. And the first thing that I notice are there are these giant 3D pale flowers flying in the air in all different colors. And they're just spinning and bending all around me. You know, it's not thick like a wall or anything, but there are enough of them. They're just randomly everywhere. I turn one way, and I see Frankie. And then I look the other way, and I see Harley. Not one of the three of us actually saw any of us, each other, land there. But we just start noticing each other. We could talk to each other, but when we spoke, when we first started to speak, there was this burst of almost like a colored puff that would come out of our mouths with every word. You know, like when you see when you're cold outside? That died off after a bit, but it was kind of a shock in the beginning. We all take a break and we make sure that we remember why we're there and that we're not from this place. Harley even asks us some personal questions just to make sure that we're intact and we seem okay. So now we have to find Lena. But I mean, where do we begin in this new world that we're in? And we check, by the way, to see if we all do see the same thing. You know, we don't want to be stumbling over each other because we're all seeing different things in there. Jonathan told us that we should all see the same thing because we're in Lena's trip, but we wanted to make sure. And it does. And it looks like a Monet painting. Literally, the ground, the trees, the sky, all of it was like this crazy Monet, and the 3D things like the flowers in the air and on the ground and the leaves on the trees, they were all really puffy, like oversized. I tried to catch one of the floating flowers, but it just squished in my hands like a puffy pillow and it floated off. I felt completely hypnotized by this thing. And it was so soft and smooth, I wanted to grab it so bad, but it's like it danced in my hands. I could never get it. I never felt anything like that. Anyway, we notice a path that's there, so we start to follow it just to see if we can find any clues going on the idea that Lena can't be far. The path we're on is very hilly, like really little hills. You know, you'd walk up for 5 steps, and then you'd walk down, up for 10, down for 3, and so on. It was not flat. If this were an actual painting, I would imagine the bumps to be brush strokes. And this was weird. So looking at the path, it would seem really long, like to get from one area to another. It should take a bit, but it was so crazy and colorful and the things floating in the air, you were always looking around. And then each time you'd turn your focus back to the path, you would find yourself way further down than you should have been. Anyway, that was interesting. And then we hear some laughing. And from the video that Jonathan showed us to get us familiarized with who Lena was, it sounded like it could be her. So we try to focus on just going forward. And then we notice, you know, just other strange stuff, like these animals walking towards us. And from afar, it looked like a giraffe and an elephant. And we stop and we check with each other that we all are seeing this. And we are, and then we get ready to go again. And then all of a sudden, they're just right there. Like I said, the time it would take for us to catch up to them or them to us isn't what we think of time in our world. In this place, there is no time, like Jonathan said, and they just showed up. We practically bumped right into them. So we step aside to let them pass, and these things were insane. The giraffe was a mix of purples and blues, and the elephant was pink and green. And Harley, she held her hand out to the elephant as it walked by, and something like green glitter just rose up from its skin, just like a puff of green glitter. And our eyes were just glued to these guys. Then after they passed us, and they're, you know, we're still looking at them, they stop and they turn around, and they nod to us, which I know sounds weird, but they nodded to us, and then they turned around and walked off. It was the strangest thing. And even stranger was when we turned around to keep going after we had met those guys. The scenery had changed on us. Don't even know how it happened. None of us even noticed it happening, but it did. We all saw it. The colors got brighter. And I'd describe it almost as the colors got more angry, but that wasn't really it. It was more just vivid and in your face, versus the softer surroundings we were welcomed with. And the ground started moving. Moving if you looked at it, but it was still solid under your feet. We rounded a corner, and these two little laughing clowns ran out of the woods, and they run right up to us. They came and stood right in front of us. And at first, they kind of freaked you out, right? But then they just nodded to us and giggled and then ran off. I mean, they didn't really seem like a threat. They seemed more innocent. They were friendly. And they ran into this meadow to our left, and we kept watching them, and they just ran until they disappeared, you know, which in our world would take a while. But there, they were gone in a flash. And then we were, you know, brought back to what we were supposed to be doing because we heard the laughing again. And it was coming from down the next hill. That hill was a little bit bigger. And we get there, and at the bottom of it, we see this red house, and it's tucked away in the trees off the path a bit. And then we looked around, and there were other houses. But this red house was the only one that was really clear to us. It was like the others were blurred out, you know, like if the painting was blurred. And in fact, you know, everything else as we got closer was just getting blurred out, almost as if we were being called to that house. We heard more laughing, and we knew that she must be in there. This was it, if she was. We were going to have to go in after her. As we got closer, we were startled by this tall black figure. It came out of nowhere. And I'm calling him a him just because of how he sounded, but he tapped Frankie on his shoulder and we all turned around. And he starts nodding to us, just like the animals and the clowns. And we're just wondering what is up. And then he spoke, but this was really strange. His mouth didn't move. In fact, it was opened and he was smiling and he had these giant white teeth. His eyes were bright green, you know. I don't really actually know how else to describe him, but he was like a stick figure in 3D. But anyway, he was speaking, or this voice was coming out of him, and it was like it was telepathic because, you know, we were hearing his voice in our heads. It was, and it kind of echoed, you know, it wasn't in the air outside of us. Anyway, he stopped nodding and he said, "This is your purpose. You must go." And then with that, he just took a few steps back, and then he shot up and out and away. Like he literally just zoomed away from us and up into the painted sky. Slow at first, but then he zipped right up until he disappeared. Now, what did he mean? You know, we were hoping, okay, that he meant that we need to go in and get Lena because that's why we were there. And one weird thing that we all talked about later was that he was looking, you know, for instance, right at me. But to Frankie, he was looking right at him. Same with Harley. He was like an illusion to all of us. So, you know, we're still looking up at the sky. He just disappeared. And then we start to notice these bees. They're coming down from where that man, that stick figure, had just gone. And, you know, we duck at first because they're coming in fast. But then we notice that they kind of take their place just hovering over the path and the direction of where we're trying to go. You know, if we take a step forward, they go forward, all in a bunch. And there was this humming. I remember the humming. It was the sound from the bees. It was this humming. And they started to go again, and so we started to follow them, you know, and they're humming. They stopped just past the entrance to that red house. We walk up to the house, and these bees, they're just hovered above us. The humming was getting louder. And then they just scattered and flew away. We just looked at each other, and on the front door, you know, was Lena in there? We had to stay focused. Harley put her hand to the door to knock. And when she hit it against the door, it was like a light switch. Everything went dark. The light above the door came on. And again, you know, we should have been freaked out, but we weren't. The flowers along the side of the house started to glow. I mean, it all seemed pleasant somehow. We look up at the sky, you know, and there were stars. Not a ton of them, but they were giant. It was the coolest thing to see. I mean, it was all very nice. It really did feel nice somehow. I mean, when you're about to go in and get someone in the situation we're in, you know, if we were in the regular world, this could get tense. It would be tense already. We don't even know what's on the inside. But we, the three of us, we were all calm. We felt good, like it would be okay. Like we were in the right place. So Harley knocks again. And then these giant lightning bug things flew out from the side of the house. And I have to say, aside from the soft bubble flowers, you know, that I couldn't catch, these guys were cool. They were bright yellow. And there were three of them. They were eye level, one to each of us, and you just kind of wanted to touch them. But I actually did put my hand out, but then I hesitated because they just looked like light. I felt like if I reached for them, you know, if I tried to touch one of them, my hand would go right through them. Their eyes were big and light blue, and they were happy. You know, they were happy yellow with happy faces. You know, I swear they were just smiling at us. And they were making these little squeaking sounds. They stayed there, just hovering right behind us as we turned and knocked again. And then the door finally opened. It was Lena. She opened the door with a big smile, but then she froze. You know, it was like something about the sight of us made her want to shut the door, but Frankie stopped her from closing it, and she just started to back away into the house. Well, Harley goes in first, and she went in slow and calm, reaching her hand out and telling her that it was okay. But Lena just backed away further and sat in a chair, looking away. And for us, I mean, our focus was Lena, but as you looked around, this house was nuts. It looked tiny, for instance, like we shouldn't even be able to fit in it, but you know, you'd get closer to something and then that illusion would pass and then it wasn't. You know, it's kind of hard to explain because, you know, this is like a dream and sometimes those are hard to explain, right? But so in this house, you know, if you saw a chair across the room, that part of the room and the chair would look way too small for you to even fit in. But then as you started to go over there and after you got there, it was all of a sudden everything would be fine. It was the right size. You fit just fine. I mean, it was enough to make you mad. It really was like a very weird dream. But we were trying to stay focused. Lena. She was definitely not smiling, and she looked almost insulted and a little afraid. She demanded to know who we were, where we came from. And then she was saying that we brought it with us. She could sense it. She said it over and over again. Harley worked on her quite a bit in a quiet and professional way, just talked to her until she was finally able to bring her down to a more manageable level. I asked her what she meant by, we brought it. I told her we were her friends and we meant no harm. We were not a threat, but she really was not accepting that. She got up from her chair and walked over to one of the windows. And while looking outside, she said, we brought in the old world, that it didn't belong here. She said that at first, she didn't either, but now she was one of them. She was accepted, and this was her home, and she didn't want the old world in her house or in her new world. We explained that we were from her world, that it's not the old world, it's her world, where she lives, where her body is. And she shot me this nasty look and got into it. She said that we were fools, and the body was just a physical form representing us. She turned to all of us and held out her arms, you know, in front of her. And she said, look, these arms, I don't need them. And then her arms just disappeared. You know, they faded away. They weren't there. And she leaned in and looked at each one of us separately, as if making a point. They faded back in after a minute or two. She continues and says that our bodies just show our presence, that in the old world, they actually divide us, that people are pretty or ugly, tall or short, you know, whatever. But in this world, the truth is that none of that matters. Our bodies are just vessels carrying our souls through that old and horrible world. She starts to get visibly agitated, and she repeats that we are fools. Then she just goes back to her chair and sits down. She's twitchy, you know, and then she flashes us a smile, like she's instantly switched moods on us. And she looks out the window again. You know, Harley looks to me and Frankie, and she's just shaking her head. You know, Lena is not in a good place. Well, Lena speaks up again and says that she is now the same as the animals and all the other creatures that take presence there. That this was a place where all creatures could come together and live in harmony. Each soul has a purpose, she says, and they can continue to always reach a higher level, that our levels are infinite. It's a place where souls exist at a higher consciousness and where their true purpose is revealed. She said she found out hers. It's to learn and discover, that she's learned so much in this new world and will never stop learning. That here, they don't live pathetic, meaningless lives where we try to get ahead with material items and false friendships. That here you exist at a higher, more intelligent, and more pleasant level. And I mean, you know, that is one thing we all felt. It did feel pretty good in there. It's just a nice feeling. I can't really explain it. But she goes on with her point, and she tells us, almost scolding us, that the only divide in her new world is good versus evil. And together, all the beings here will fight off evil when it tries to invade. And then she takes on more of a paranoid demeanor, talking about the evil things that she knows are there, that some are tricksters that will throw you off track. And then there are some that are pure evil and will try to hijack your mind for power. But she assures us that none of that has come knocking on her door, that she is okay and she's in fact doing great. As for us, we just keep telling her over and over again that Jonathan sent us, that we were here to help her, but she kept denying it. She said people didn't matter to her. All she knew was that there was an old world, but who was in it, what it was, all of it had been wiped from her mind. All right, well, Lena really fought us off. She wanted nothing to do with anything we were saying. It's like she knew that we meant something, something that she might know or have known, but she didn't want to. She said she'd always been in this place, really. She thinks she may have left it for a while and that it had all been a mistake. Now she was home, she said. Harley later explained to us that that was Lena's way of trying to seem to acknowledge us, but then build her case back up of why she was right and be able to keep the wall up that she had built around her. It was sad to watch. You know, she was sort of like you'd think of a very happy mental patient. You know, but they're happy only because of their imagined bliss. And really, they have no idea where they are. It was starting to get more tense for us now at this point. And that house, you know, it was so distracting. And I swear she was making things happen so that it would be that way. You know, like the lights. They reminded me of the giant lightning bugs, only they weren't a happy yellow. The rug under our feet seemed to come to life, and the strings in the crazy shag carpet, they were poking up at us one at a time. Things like that. It was just coming at us from all directions. She was trying to intimidate us with her thoughts, but it was changing her happy home. And it became clear to us, and we could see that even she could tell, she was losing control. And this lasted for a while. I mean, to us. It seemed like we were trying to maintain and talk to her and explain things to her for hours, but who knows how long it really was. It felt like we were just going in circles. Harley, you know, she's now kneeling on the floor because the house is shaking so bad. She starts calling out for it all to stop. And her yelling did cause everyone to pause. And then Frankie got some of his senses back. And when he came out of the dream fog that we were all falling into, he tried something that he remembered Jonathan told us might work. We were in Lena's mind, okay? And she could resist, but since we're all sharing that space, he might be able to project an image to her. He walked up to the chair that she was in, and he kneels down in front of her, and he just peers into her eyes, you know, like he stared her down. He was trying to project things about Jonathan into her current thoughts, you know, what Jonathan was, who he was to her, what he looked like. She kept looking away, you know, but he didn't stop. And eventually she couldn't look away. And then it was like she was locked in. After a few moments, she started trembling and her eyes were filling up with tears. When she was finally able to pull her eyes away from him, she was full on shaking. Frankie lowered his head almost as if he was exhausted. I mean, he had to shake it off, but then he got up. Lena, you know, she's now slumped in her chair. She just has this horrified look on her face. We could tell by looking at her that she knew. And that's when she got angry. We didn't expect that. We thought we had gotten to the, you know, I give in moment. But no, that was not the case at all. She pops up out of her chair and she starts screaming at us, telling us that that is why people in general should not come to this place, that there are only a few that are worthy and that she was one of them and now we have ruined it for her. I mean, her face was turning red with how mad she was. And this was like, you know, a dream, right? So her face was turning really red. And so there were a million different types of lamps in this house. Tall ones, short ones, ones on the walls. She had different little weird knickknacks all over the place, shelves everywhere. And she starts knocking things over. And when she'd hit something over, it would burst into flames. In the chaos, you know, I caught one of the lightning bugs from outside hover in front of the window. I mean, it took up the whole window. These things were huge. And it looked at me and it looked in the house. And then I saw all three of them flying away. And it made me sad for some reason, like really sad. I mean, those things were cool, but things were getting really emotional in that house. And I sensed that we too, you know, could lose it soon. We had to stay focused and she had to be willing to come with us. Pretty soon, it was just a crazy house with a bunch of stuff on fire. We had to get out. So I run over to the door and I open it and I start yelling for everyone to follow. You know, where I was going, I had no idea, but we had to get out of there. So Harley runs out the door, and then Frankie, he just picks Lena up, and he carries her out, kicking and screaming. When we all get outside, we notice the world is changing again. This world, her world, the one that she created with her mind, was melting. Not only was everything in the house now on fire, there was fire everywhere outside. But the trees weren't falling. Nothing was actually burning. The house wasn't actually burning. It was more like it was melting. And it came to me. It was like wet paint dripping. The Monet world was falling. Lena fell to her knees, and I just ran over to her. And that's when it started raining, because, you know, it just had to start raining. Had no effect on the fires, but it was raining, and it was raining hard. I had to talk loud, practically yell. I kept reminding her of the experiment, how she was a successful research scientist, and that she knew what she was doing, and how she was doing it to help bring information to the world. Information that might be helpful. That if she wanted a better world, she should bring back what she knows, like she wanted to do, and share it in the world where she belongs. Eventually, she stops crying. And I mean, we are all soaked. Harley and Frankie, you know, they're just standing by us, keeping an eye on things, while I'm thinking I'm almost there with Lena. Well, Frankie all of a sudden yells out that something's coming. Through the fire that's spread across the path now, across from the forest to the meadow, comes this large black cart. I mean, it's a horse cart, you know, a buggy. And it's being pulled by two giant black horses with red eyes. And it's coming up at us fast. And in this place, you know, I don't know if that means it's going to be here in 2 seconds or what. I grab Lena by the shoulders and I tell her it's time. It's now or never. And while I'm looking at her, it's like time suddenly slows down and everything's in slow motion. Lena looks at the black buggy coming at us and then looks at me through the rain and she nods. And that's all Frankie needs. And he starts yelling out over and over again, success, success. And then without warning, my body starts buzzing inside. I've got a grip on Lena and she's looking at me and she's still nodding. You know, now it's like she can't stop nodding. Something's happening, and I'm just hoping that Jonathan heard our cries. The buggy's getting closer, and we all sort of just huddle down by the side of the road. My body's buzzing, I squeeze my eyes shut, and then that's it. The next thing I know is that I'm being woken up back at the lab. I mean, at first, I'm in a total panic, you know what I mean? Well, you know how it is when you wake up from some kind of harsh dream. You feel it when you get up, right? And sometimes it stays with you for a while, right? Well, that's just how it felt, times a million. I wasn't sure where I was at first. I was looking around. I wanted to just jump off that table. And we were all like that, except for Lena. The doctors were all there. They were checking us all out, and her too. She was barely opening her eyes. I mean, can you even imagine? I cannot even begin to try to pretend I would know how she felt. So the getting back was definitely a thing. And there was a lot to that. You know, there were a lot of questions. They were checking our vitals and our minds. And all of that took a while. And although we were hydrated, we were starving, they brought us food, you know, just all of that stuff so that we could wake up and try to feel normal, which for us really didn't seem to take that long. We learned that it all went okay from their end, you know, the scientists. Not only was Jonathan glad to have all of us back, they were also glad they learned more about what they could do with all of this. I mean, you could tell they were just glad the whole thing was a success from an experimental perspective. But right now their focus was Lena. And we learned something when we got back, too. Because to us, it felt like we were in there for hours. But you know how long we were in there? 12 minutes. I could not even believe that. But so it was. We, me and my team, came out of this and all was good. But then what about Lena? Well, there's good news and bad news there about a few things. So let me sum that up. The good news is that Lena came out in good health. The findings were that she had a reaction to the Davy mixture. She didn't have this with the tea, but the tea would always wear off. Here she had a constant feed. And after being in for so long, her body would actually physically react if they tried to disconnect her because her dreamlike consciousness was rejecting being yanked out of her state, out of her happy place. And they felt like they learned something there. I mean, it was her mind that was taking over. It had that power. Now, the bad news was that her memories from her trip were fading fast. You know, she wasn't all the way awake even, and things were starting to disappear. And we've all experienced how our dreams fade, even as we try to share them. And our dreams, you know, they just last for a few during one night. She slept for days. You know, we were not on DMT, though, and so we could remember at least what she told us, and we passed all of that along to the scientists, along with everything that we saw and how it felt to us, and they would then continue to work with different methods to try to find out what she really learned in there, and what DMT is, and what does it do? Was Lena really somewhere? Did we go to an alternate dimension? She claims we did. Or was she just tripping herself right out of her mind? I mean, there's so much that happened, it was hard to fit it all in here, even in two vlogs. But between me and my team and the group at the lab, what we could figure out after we provided what we knew about it all was that it definitely seemed to tap into a place deep in Lena's mind. I mean, she did discover her true purpose, but then even Lena couldn't deny that her going to school for years and years to become a top research scientist was the learning and discovery that she was told was her purpose while on her trip. She already knew that. She just never looked at it that way before. She found an inner peace. I mean, she really did feel happy. And coming back, she missed it. And the place did feel happy, I have to say. If this was created from her mind, then it came from her seeking that peace. If it really is a place we traveled to, it still did really seem like her mind had control over where we were when we were with her. So then the scientists would want to know, are we going to another dimension where we create our own atmosphere? Because that could be it. It could be a combination of both. There is so much to the brain that we don't know. You know, this one trip could not solve all of the answers. But things did work. And now they have the VMT device. And when they're able to play all of that back, maybe it would give them some more answers. Maybe Lena could remember. But we would be long gone at that point. It's frustrating to not really get there, but it's a reality. You have to have patience if you want to figure it all out. The fact that Lena could come back told the scientists that she had not been transcended to a higher or more aware dimension, at least not for good. at the same time, what we were able to bring back did leave them open to the idea that more study was needed, because even in their algorithm, it showed that she fell in the top percentage of similarities with other DMT users. Can't be a coincidence. They don't really believe in coincidences. So they were torn between two thoughts. And, you know, Lena would move on. She was not physically changed, but she said that mentally she's definitely a bit more anxious. And she'll admit she knows she felt happy there. And now she feels different because she's back. And Jonathan could see that she is. But she was the same person at the same time. And although she's seemingly physically unaffected, she's pretty much banned from any more DMT studies. But to her, that's okay, because it was enough out of her. She had done enough, and ultimately, she is a scientist, and she had completed her goal. Coming back to it all, she too knew her limits. We were eventually out of there once we were cleared. And I mean, you know, we left a little confused too. There were no concrete answers here. But that's why we have the research guys out there, right? That's what drives them. We should be glad for that. And this isn't something that it seems they'll have real answers to anytime soon. There's just so much to it. I can't say I'd recommend taking a trip under DMT influence if you're just out there in the world. I mean, this is nowhere near being approved as anything, and certainly not safe. You know, that's a job for guys like Jonathan. They get the answers, and only time will really show how affected or unaffected Lena is. And until then, they can't approve it to be safe. That's why it's illegal pretty much everywhere in the world. Lena was under a doctor's care while she was under. It's not the same thing, you know, if you have your best buddy sitting next to you as your trip sitter. Just something to think about. I hope, though, that we can all get the answers someday. You know, like a lot of jobs, it would have been interesting to stick around while it all unfolded. But we had to go, because our mission was done. And that was my job, diving into a psychedelic mind in a psychedelic world. It was definitely something that I will never forget. And thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the vlog. Like, subscribe, and turn on your notifications so that you know when I post next. And until next time, and I will talk to you all soon.